Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your friend and host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today. I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone no matter what stage of life you're in. I hope that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode, and it would mean the world to me if you left a rating or review. I'm so glad you're here, and I cannot wait to introduce you to this week's guest. Hey, I'm so glad you're here. Today we're sitting down with my new friend, Tiffany Bloom, and Tiffany and I are talking all about her new book, Pray Tell. Pray Tell is addressing men and women in all work settings from within the church and beyond. Tiffany is a popular author and podcast host who is setting out to understand the cultural and spiritual narrative that silences women and illuminates the devastating and emotional, financial, and social impact of silence in the face of injustice. Today, Tiffany and I are breaking down how to listen, what to do when we see injustice before us, and how we can make moves that help others feel heard and not so small. This conversation is so great, and I'm so excited for you to hear from my friend Tiffany. So friends, grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey y'all, I'm so excited. I'm sitting down with a friend, Tiffany Bloom. We've just been chatting, and I know I say that just about every episode, we've just been chatting, but like, we have been. I'm like, oh shoot, we need to hit record because this is actually why we're here. So Tiffany, hey, thank you for joining me for coffee today.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Isn't this so great? Virtual coffee. I've got some caramel and nut pod creamer in mind today. So just for the visual, for all you listeners, here we are living our best life, drinking coffee. And Jeanette's wearing a coffee shirt.
Oh my gosh, you guys, this shirt really, I know I've shared about it on Instagram so many times, but it's, I probably need to buy the purple one too.
Obviously. Lavender or like a deep amethyst? What are we working with?
It's like a mauve-ish. Yeah, it would look really good on you, Tiffany. It would look really, really good on you.
I'm down with the mauve. I'm down. Yeah. Oh. Unless it's in a bathroom. I can't do mauve on the walls in a bathroom. But besides that, I'm down.
Mauve in a bathroom honestly takes me, right back in my childhood.
Oh, yeah.
My mom's bathroom with floral rose, floral patterns around me. The potpourri on the back of the toilet.
I thought about that in about 20 years. Yeah, maybe 30.
When you're out and about, you live in like a coffee-centric area. What is your coffee order?
What a fun question. Oh, yes. I live in the Seattle area. So this is like Coffee Nation. Yes. So here's the thing. Obviously, there's the like, so how we answer this up here is what's your Starbucks drink and what's your like indie coffee house drink?
Yeah.
So my Starbucks drink is a flat white with coconut milk.
Very nice.
And my everywhere else drink, get ready for how not creative this is, is just usually a pour over or a French press if I'm feeling bougie and if it doesn't cost more than Americano. And then I will often do some like steamed almond milk or steamed coconut milk. I try to avoid dairy. And then if they have any like house syrup, I'm like, oh, what's the most, like, you have like a chili chocolate house syrup. Okay, I'll take that. I love trying new things. So to ask me, like, my coffee order is like, what's the bougie, unique coffee of that particular coffee house? Right. I went through a phase at my favorite coffee house here. It's called Olympia Coffee. It's so gorgeous. It's so fabulous. Lots of rose gold and black and white, very Parisian. Mm-hmm. And they did a rose infused coffee. That's right, people. Rose infused coffee, and then they put dried rose petals on the top that you could eat. I know, it's next level, and maybe just a little shot of lavender in there, and it was so delicious. I loved it.
That sounds so good. I like Starbucks because it's reliable, right?
It's reliable. You need reliability, people. We need reliability.
I love that, but I also love going in and being like, "Hey, what did you drink today? Like, tell me what's a good coffee." Like, I love to try different coffees. So, my go-to right now has been pretty steady for probably 6 months, but it's a honey lavender oat milk latte.
Oh, girl, rolling with that oat milk. Mm-hmm. I tried to get on the oat milk train. I'm like, this is not for me, but I have mad respect. But the honey lavender, sign me up.
Yeah. Tiffany, we are not here to talk about coffee, even though we could.
But we had a great time doing it.
We did.
So good.
I would love for you just to tell us like a little about who you are, what you do, and then we're going to jump into your new book.
Yeah, thank you. So I am a writer, speaker, and podcaster. I co-host a show called Why Though with fellow author Ashley Abercrombie. And I have spent the majority of my life at the intersection of women and justice and faith. That's my lane. That's my passion, is to disciple, speak, and encourage women to live in the fullness of God. And did like video Bible studies, all kinds of fun stuff. But most recently, I wrote a new book called Pray Tell, PREY, Why We Silence Women Who Tell the Truth and How Everyone Can Speak Up. And it's really unearthing why we societally, spiritually, financially silence women and the ramifications for doing so, and how it is not serving the kingdom. It is not treating women as image bearers, and how we must change this. Because as I was telling you before we hit record, Jeanette, a woman's trajectory in life is not necessarily determined by her resources, her education, her connections. It's determined if a man will abuse his power at her expense. I mean, you think of how many women have left their particular workplace or their church or their gym or fill in the blank because they felt uncomfortable around the guys. They might not have used the vernacular harassed or assaulted, but they felt uncomfortable or just icky or something like that, or not heard or not valued at the table. There's all these ways we operate in systems that don't uplift women, but so many of us are so conditioned to just get along and sit in these systems and not really speak up. And so it really is an attempt, which my honest and earnest attempt to help us all process why women are treated the way they are in society, and how we can architect safer, equitable spaces.
Oh, I love that so much. And it's something, it's a little, I feel like I've been in a bubble. Like I feel like I've been in this protected bubble, because I have been at home the last, I don't know, 15 years with my husband and my kids and raising kids and now working in this field where it's actually a lot more women, like in the podcasting realm, which is kind of fun, but it's different. So I feel insulated in a sense. But I also feel ignorant in a sense. So I would love for you just to kind of break down like kind of this vernacular of like when we kind of have that like, oh, I feel uncomfortable, what's going on? Like kind of like start there. Like how do we identify and how can we then feel heard? So identify in hearing.
Perfect. So how can we identify? Well, really what we're looking for is any imbalance of power between men and women. And so that can be physical space. That can be a man's physical size. That's an imbalance of power. That can be his resources, or his platform might be bigger than ours. His financial standing might be bigger. His reputation might be outsized. Any of those things where our loyalty, our body, our voice, our finances, our space in the world can be exploited. Without our permission. It can be taken advantage of without our permission. That can look as simple as being talked over in a meeting, that or at church. That could be when you have an inconvenient or unpopular experience that you've had, and speaking up and it being diminished or demonized, or assuming that you did something to deserve it. Because often we love to victim blame, because it's easier to blame a woman for something that's happened to her than address the system in which it happened and people who have abused their power. It is understanding that when we have proximity to power, we might bend toward the dominant culture or the way somebody wants us to act, because we want to fit in. We want to honor the people who let us in the room, whether it's in our faith space or in the place we work or worship, whatever the case may be. We so badly want to belong that we'll sometimes contort ourselves to fit a broken system so we can be valued in that system. And so it can be something simple as, being labeled emotional or insecure or angry, all the way to somebody hurt or harmed your body or or stole from you, or, even when someone harms your body, that's an act of theft. So just any way that you've been taken advantage of or manipulated or gaslit to believe someone else's version of events, and you are seen as collateral damage. Because in my situation, I spoke truth to power, and I wasn't the one who was harmed, but I witnessed the harm. In my situation, when I spoke truth to power, I wasn't the one who was harmed, but I witnessed the harm, and I found that I was treated as disposable, and the man who abused his power at a woman's expense was treated as indispensable. So, and I wasn't the girl who cried wolf. I had a track record of honesty and a great work ethics and above reproach character. So you can imagine my surprise when charisma was applauded over character. And we often weigh, when it's a he said, she said situation between men and women, And especially in the faith space, we often praise accolades of the man over the accusations of the woman. And we value his intent over his impact. He didn't mean it like that. He has your best interest at heart. All those things that we brush off that really assume that men are always intended and it's God's plan for them to be in charge, rather than seeing everyone as inherently worthy of dignity.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network and is sponsored in part by...
Hey, I want to break in real quick to tell you about a company and a product that I absolutely love. I've always loved having my nails done, and I really prefer to do them at home because, you know, like cost and convenience and all. I've used everything from the high-end polish to the nail stickers to press-ons, and they've all just missed the mark for me until now. Last year, I found Olive & June. Olive & June is a nail company that teaches you how to give the perfect at-home mani and pedi. They want you to feel beautiful, and they give you the perfect tools and polish to do so. They want you to have the best looking hands and toes out there. Their nail polish is top notch, and I personally had manicures last well past 10 days with little to no chipping. And don't even get me started on my pedicures. They last forever. I mean, come on. Their cuticle serum has stopped me from anxiously picking at my hands, and their nail strengthener has changed the shape of my nails. With some of the best, brightest colors, really any polish color that would ever fit your fancy. Think that you would really like Olive & June. If you want to check it out, head to oliveandjune.com, and for 20% off your order, use code JeanetteT20. That's JeanetteT20, the number 20. Let me know what colors you pick, or if you need any help choosing, hit me up in DMs. I'll help you. Okay, now back to this week's episode.
It makes me so sad that we even have to have these conversations, right? Like it's so prevalent in our culture that these are words that we have to understand, gaslighting and accusation and charisma over character, like that these things actually exist. And Jesse and I were just, my husband's name is Jesse. Jesse and I were just talking recently, and I was like, I'm so sad at seeing the stop the Asian American hate, stop Black hate, stop Black. I'm like, why can't we just stop all of it? Like, my heart aches because I want the Christians of our nation, of our world, to come together and just be Jesus.
Yeah, it just shows you how power tribalism and how much we value power. It's so idolatrous, isn't it? But it's power over another people group. It's power. And it's believing that your way and the way you live and the way you operate and the way you dress and the way you spend and the way you look, it's a dangerous way to live. And it's not kingdom, just like you said. Yeah. That's not kingdom. That's not of God. When we look at Jesus, the way he came for both individual salvation and systemic change, we have a beautiful picture of what could be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even the first will become the last. Like there's the upside down kingdom is a very real thing. And instead, we have made it a very much like pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things I was just kind of like hearing is and I actually just had Christy Wright on the podcast, and we were talking about like, stop saying like little or small, or like my small business, my little thing, like, or like stop like excusing yourself. Like, well, I'm sorry, can I ask a question? And those kind of things. Like, we have to stop playing small. Yeah. And so like, I would love for you to kind of speak into this, like, stop playing small and like give us like this like boost of encouragement to like speak up.
Yeah. I think there's so many ways to unpack this. I think first, as women, we've taught to be nice at the expense of being kind. Mm. And the idea of being kind and commanding in many cultures, especially male dominated spaces, is seen as bossy or insecure or demonstrative. And so women are painted in colors that they were never intended to be painted in. So what do? We minimize. We do play small, and we don't want to be seen as anything other than the nice.
Yeah.
And what happens is we allow others to define our space and define our work and define our ability and define, I mean, who we are in our essence. And so I think that we first have to understand that we've been corralled into these small spaces by, especially in the male dominated world that we live in. I think of, you know, I'm going to take it back to 100 years. When you think of World War II and, you know, 85 years rather, and men are going off to war, and 6 million women joined the workforce, and they took menial jobs, but they did it out of the love of country and to do their part, and they're women, and they show up, and they're incredible leaders. And they were, you know, forced into poor working conditions and sexual harassment, and they were demeaned and treated absolutely horribly. And then the men came home from war and wanted their jobs back, and they were, you know, you need to leave. But then they architected their lives to work, and they're using their skills and gifts and abilities. And so you see this just this painful situation where you were needed but not wanted.
Mm.
You filled this space, but now we need you to go away. And so. Yeah. Their work, and I think even after the Reformation, you know, at the time of the printing press, this idea that a woman's world and she was capable of much and playing big, if you will, and they were, you know, they're business owners, and they were, you know, we look at the first century and then you move through medieval history and then now today, women have always been doing the dang thing,
right.
But we have made their world smaller. We, and especially during the Industrial Revolution, men were the ones with resources. Men were the ones with means. And so, you know, if a woman had a little, not a coffee shop, let's say, but more likely like a little brewery or a little mom and pop shop, and resourced men came into town and drove her business out, you know, you see how over time resource and capital and men who pooled their resources were able to make a woman's world even smaller. Hmm. And so now, as what you said of like, we play small, we have been culturally conditioned to do so. But then you see Jesus in the scriptures and the way he empowered and unleashed and emboldened women to live beautiful and big lives. You know, we think of Mary Magdalene. She was a business owner. She was an entrepreneur, and she funded a lot of Jesus' ministry, and he treated her as an equal. I mean, it's just so beautiful when we look at the scriptures, and we can't hold, you know, particular passages that minimize women over the whole life of Jesus, you know? So this idea of playing big, I think of, you know, as soon as you said that example of playing small, I thought of the grocery store. I love grocery shopping. It's my thing. I don't like regular shopping, like at the Home Goods or the Target very much. But I love Target. I'm a woman, but sorry for that broad
stroke. A woman in America. I love Target.
A woman in America. And I love Target. And I'm so sorry to broad stroke that, but you can't tell me you don't love a trip to Target. All right. Anyway. But I love grocery shopping. We go like every 3 days. I know, way too often, but I love it so much. It's just my happy place. And the amount of times I'll walk through an aisle and a woman will say, oh, so sorry. And she'll move over to the side. You didn't need to say sorry. I can go around you. Or we can mutually move to make space for both of us. She apologized for taking up space.
Yeah.
And so one day at the grocery store, I decided to count how many women said sorry when I tried to like gently move past them to get to where I needed to go. And it was 11. 11 times women, and it was all different women. And I just thought, and I decided to count how many men said sorry when I moved around them. How many, Jeanette? How
None.
Many said sorry?
None
of them. None of them. And this idea of being small is even physical, not just mental.
Yeah.
We need to be small and not take up space and not get in anyone's way. Just do our little thing and stay in our little lane and look through our little peephole of what we see in the world. And reality is, we exist as image bearers to contribute to human flourishing and show up and speak up. And sometimes we, you know, especially, you know, research shows as early as 24 months, little girls will make excuses for the parents who've harmed her. And so we have started this so young, and it's very difficult to find a middle school girl who hasn't been harassed.
Yeah.
And it's often by a boy who wants to prove he's quote unquote a man to other boys in class, but also to other girls. And then you see fraternity culture taken into adult life where men are not held responsible for their actions, and there's not consequences handed out, but these girls are encouraged and forced to suffer and go to biology 201 with the boy who took advantage of them the night before. And we're talking about 18-year-old girls, you know? Yeah. So then of course in adult life, we propped this up of, if you're a man, you're going to get far, you can get away with whatever. And girls, if you speak up, you'll be unemployable. You'll be the one who just can't fit in, who's just insecure, who's just raising the banner for no need. And so one of the things when we talk about speaking up is allowing others to lend their strength. Because when we speak up solo, you know, isolation and abuse of power doesn't happen in a vacuum. Somebody who's abusing their power is likely doing it to multiple people.
Right.
And so we have to be able to see, this is happening to me and this is not right. We first have to lament that this is happening, whether you have some, whether it's happening to you or whether you're watching it happen, whether you're gaining from the situation.
Mm-hmm.
If there is an imbalance of power and it's to your benefit and you're considering your proximity to that power, you have to see how is this hurting image bearers? How is this hurting women? And lament. And with that posture of humility, then we can listen to women share their stories and listen without judgment. Because Jeanette, what we often do is we project how we think we would respond to something over how somebody actually with their formative experience, perhaps their religious upbringing, their own trauma, how they might respond, have their personality, their Enneagram number, how they would respond to something. And so we cannot trump up how we would respond as better or proof of how they should have better handled it right. than a woman. We just must listen, consider our body language, consider our facial expressions. And then we've got to learn how these things happen, because we can't go a day without reading something in CNN or BBC News or Christianity Today of how a man has abused his power, both in sacred and secular culture,
yeah.
from Governor Andrew Cuomo to Carl Lentz to fill in the blank to there's always somebody yeah. new, Robbie Zacharias, you know. And then really understanding love and justice are on the same side of the coin. And in faith spaces particularly, we sometimes divorce love and justice. But justice isn't vindictive. It's not looking to just punch somebody when they're down. It's recompense and reconciliation and redress for those who've been harmed. And often women are minimized. If something unpopular comes to the surface and we find out about an imbalance of power, we instantly have an empathy for the perpetrator of power. And research proves this. We're more likely, even women, to give empathy where it isn't due versus to the woman who needs it. And so we must reorient ourselves to believe women. And when we think of the first century, the Greco-Roman influence that infiltrated the early church believed that women were inherently untrustworthy, that they were deformed men, that they were the presence of evil. The early church father Tertullian said that they were the devil's gateway. And so this belief that women are inherently only good for one thing, which often we're told, and we know that in rap videos, but then also rape culture mirrors purity culture in the sense that it's on a woman to control the exterior and what happens to her. Mm-hmm. And that if something bad happens, it's because she wore something, said something, or did something to deserve it. So again, we're placing the onus on women to escape abusive power more than we're putting it on men to behave justly. And in reality, as women, we just want to thrive. We're not asking to lord over and be the king of everything. No.
Right.
We're asking for partnership. We're asking to work together for a beautiful flourishing, to see, just as you said, that upside down kingdom.
Mm, I love that. I was just thinking, love and justice. It's how we parent our children, right? We parent
yes.
because we love them, but they also have to have consequences because they have to learn the right way to live.
Yeah.
It blows my mind that we can parent this way, and hopefully we're parenting this way, right? Hopefully we're bringing better yeah. adults into the world. But it just hurts my heart that we're not seeing this on the outside, that we're not that we have separated love and justice. Well, I can't and I don't get it. I wanted to say I get it. It's hard when you have these people, these pastors, these politicians up on a pedestal, and we're mm-hmm. trust.
Yeah.
And they break our trust, and then we're devastated because we love them. And I think that we moral failure is the big word right now.
Yeah.
Moral failure. And it's that's just a pretty word.
Yeah.
We're just dressing it up.
Yeah.
What's happening isn't just, they're suffering from moral failure. No. There needs to be justice brought in here.
Come
because
on. That's right.
Because moral failure hurts somebody.
Yes.
Or some buddies. And not yeah. just some buddies, but some bodies. Friend.
Yeah.
Hurt for our sisters, for our friends, for our people. Because the statistics of women who have been hurt or women who've just been silenced mm-hmm. devastates me.
Yeah.
And my biggest thing with this podcast and this platform that I've been given and this ministry that I believe that we get to walk in is that we are called to hear and help others feel heard, because
yeah.
God hears us.
That's
even
right.
when we don't want him to. He
That's
will not
right.
stop hearing us. And so we're just going back to that thing, how can we be heard? How can we make sure our sisters who are hurting are heard?
Yeah. I think first I want to touch on what you spoke to, and this idea that we will have that sympathy for someone who's had a moral failure, what we're often doing is employing confirmation bias. So we'll search our own minds looking for reasons why we still trust that person, why that person's good, or even denials. We'll go so far as to believe that he couldn't have done this because I've personally had experience where he's shown generosity, kindness, benevolence. Therefore, he's not capable of such poor behavior. We want to believe that when we gave somebody our allegiance or trust, we weren't a poor judge of character.
Right.
No one wants to believe they're a poor judge of character. So we'd rather hold to that than believe that there's a system enabling this person where he can get away with power. Also, research shows that more men who have ascent to power, they are likely to see themselves as more sexually desirable, will seek out sexual affairs and misconduct, and of course, not always consensual. So if somebody feels like I can get away with anything I want because I have power, and we often, especially in faith spaces, those narcissistic tendencies are then praised as leadership qualities, and they often shed the virtues that got them to a place of leadership in the first place. The fruit of the spirit, you know, these things that we value in a spouse in the Christian faith, we've got to be able to hold true of like, I have to be able to understand that just like you said, you hurt somebody, and I have to hold you accountable to that at whatever semblance and level of power I have. So when we talk about what can we do about that, before something kicks off, we have to demand equitable spaces. We have to see, you know, and I'm just going to give a very, very, very practical example that we can all employ. Jeez. No matter who we are, no matter what age we are, no matter where you stand in your organization or church or gym or space you occupy, you might not be at the tippy top, so you feel like you don't have power, and that's not true. And people are banking on you believing you don't have power, by the way, when something kicks off. And it's aptly called bystander intervention. So when you see something, you can say something. And what I'm about to share is employed in every branch of the military. It is in several educational institutions across the country. And it's this. First, if you see impropriety, if you see an imbalance of power between a man and a woman, maybe Doug is leaning too far, maybe he's speaking too loud, you can tell Susie is a little, she's darting her eyes, something like that, going up and simply changing the subject. Hey, Susie, I had something on the copy machine. Go over numbers for next week. Could you walk to the copy machine with me or if we're in the foyer church? Hey, I was going to go grab a coffee. Did you want to go to the coffee station with me and grab a coffee? No harm, no foul. You don't have a lot to lose in that situation. You're just being awkward and changing the situation and removing that woman from it and just breaking it up and changing it. Next, you go to Doug. I think I called him Doug, Chad. Yeah. I change it every time. But you go to Doug and you say, hey, man, did you see how you came across? I could tell she was really uncomfortable. The way she was looking around. Did you notice that you came across? Now, Doug's been seen.
Yeah.
Doug's been seen. Yeah. So it's before we see it on the news in like a year, we can catch it before it has legs, before it's running down the aisle and we don't know how to stop it. To know he's been seen and to be able to and say, hey, man, I think I might need to report you. That was super inappropriate. And then we go to Susie. I think I called her Susie. Lindsay, whatever. And we go and we're like, hey, I might be totally off base, but did you feel uncomfortable in that situation? Because what often women do is we're like, he didn't mean it like that. I'm sure he didn't mean it like that. I don't know. But then when someone can be like, hey, I saw that. That was uncomfortable. That was inappropriate. I believe that was inappropriate. Did you notice that was inappropriate? She now has just there's a place for her to belong and be like, yeah, I did feel, you know, at first I was thinking maybe it was okay, but now that you saw it too, I see what happened and how that wasn't okay. And so then we can say, hey, and she might say, no, he's like that all the time and be like, okay, I just want to make myself available if there's anything. Or then we say, if you need to go to HR, if you need to go to a pastor, I'll go with you. I'll lend my strength. You don't have to go alone. Because when somebody's been through something, forcing the victim to walk through the speaking up process and the traumatic experience all by herself is preposterous. And history has depended on women to speak up for themselves. And in reality, we're better in numbers. This isn't a moment. This is a movement. We've got to be together. And you think about the first women's movement and then the second wave. And now here we are in this third wave. And it's when women got together and joined their strength and lend their strength and locked arms and walked together for common goodness. Mm-hmm. And so being able to do that, walk that out with her, because we likely don't have the emotional baggage that she has of being the person who was taken advantage of. And you know what, when I say imbalance of power, and you mentioned talking about our sons and daughters, in Pray Tell, I have a whole section on what does it look like to raise sons and daughters in such a manner that they would grow up to not believe that they can dominate or subjugate or demonize another person's physical space, reputation, body, or or time. Yeah. Being able to understand we don't have power over that person. We have to look for those nonverbal cues when people are uncomfortable.
Ah, I love that so much. It's parenting.
Yeah,
so many things
man.
To bring in.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of my favorite questions to ask authors as they like are releasing books or have just released it is, I believe in this thing as we write, like we live the book, right? Like we live it and then yeah. we write it. But as we write it, God's like counseling us over the keyboard. So I call it keyboard counseling.
It's totally true.
It's
totally true.
It's like awful in part of why I like put my proposal away for a few minutes because I'm like, I'm not ready. And so what was something that was brought up through that keyboard counseling for you?
Oh my gosh. What wasn't brought up through that keyboard counseling for me? As I mentioned at the beginning, writing Pray Tell and discovering the vernacular to describe my own experiences mm-hmm. as well as give other women an understanding to have that revisionist history and look at how they've been treated and realize, wait a second, that wasn't okay, whether it was middle school, high school, you know, working at McDonald's and now in their adult life. It gave me even mine, you know, things that happened in kindergarten, first grade. Yeah. And as I'm writing this out, I'm realizing just how serious what happened to me was. Thinking you're a kid, you're like, I don't know what's happening right now. And so finding out and how and what happened and how it affected me and how I brought that into my marriage. Mm-hmm. Something that I didn't deserve or ask for, but that crippled me in life in ways that I would have never identified before.
Yeah. Well, and I just love that you live this. That's not what I was trying to say.
I don't love that I lived it either.
I don't love that you live this, but I love that you're giving language. And I think that's something that I've seen so much, especially like into my 30s and now as we raise kids and like giving them language for feelings, learning these feelings. And I feel like it's, you and I were raised very similarly. And so like now having this like counseling lingo, having gone through counseling.
Yeah.
Like, So I feel like you're giving us more language and you're taking this pray word, this word that could make us feel worried or scared, but you're saying like, hey, we're gonna like shake that off and we're actually gonna come together and stand as united women saying like, no, you can't do this anymore. Like, this isn't okay. This isn't what Jesus came for. This is not what we're about. I love when you're talking about Jesus, like inviting Martha in, like she like called him rabbi. That means he taught her. That was so
not the norm.
Like,
correct.
It wasn't just like, oh, my buddy, Jesus. It was teacher, rabbi, authority over me. I am submitted to you. You have accepted me. And it's just like, Jesus,
And he never exploited her loyalty, her body, her reputation. It's just so beautiful. When I think of the woman caught in adultery, I have similar excitement because before he addressed her salvation and her sin, he physically protected her body and reputation. Mm-hmm. He put his own body in front of hers and addressed those who wanted to cast stones at her. I mean, it's just profound how much he respected and honored a woman's body and place in the world.
Mm. I just love it so much. I just love Jesus so much.
And
I just
wish so good.
That our
he's
people
so good.
Behaved like him. Yes. Come on, people.
Come on.
Okay. One of the last questions I always ask, and it's one of my favorites, I don't know why. It's become one of my favorite questions over the last year. We believe that there's a season for everything under the sun. That's what Ecclesiastes tells us. Right now, it's time for coffee. But what is it time for in your life right now?
Ooh, I would say, you know, it's one thing to write about a book of action and steps that need to happen to bring cultural shifts and changes. And it's another thing to go get your boots on the ground and see it happen. And at this point in time, since the Me Too movement of 2017, there is no legislation or bylaws, safer spaces for women in the public square. So I feel like the next step for me is being able to really, whether it's faith spaces, organizations, business, and invite them to consider balanced power. What would that look like to architect their space and to be willing to reorganize their space to be safer, to be a place where women feel welcome? I mean, one of the top reasons, as I mentioned, women leave the workplace or their church is because they weren't respected or honored or heard. Yeah. So if we can systemically and step by step build places where that can happen, I want to get on board for that.
I love that. I love it so much. I see big things. I'm like,
I hope so.
I'll put money towards your campaign is what I'm saying.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. If you could there like you just hug our friend right now and just like kind of like whisper one little bit of encouragement in her ear to like pump her up to go forward, what would you say right now?
Yeah. What happened to you, what you've never spoke to another soul, you did not deserve. Mm. Your God is for you. It is in your DNA to heal. Who you are is enough. You are victorious. You serve a majestic God, and goodness is and mercy is quite literally following you wherever you go.
That's beautiful. Thank you for that. That is going to just like speak to that one person, to those thousands of people. Like it's just going,
amen.
It's going to hit in that heart. And I'm just so thankful for you doing this and for putting boots to the ground and for being the friend who says like, nope, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah. No, too many of us have lost too much that we didn't deserve to lose.
Yeah. Tiffany, thank you so much. This was so fun.
Jeanette, the pleasure was all mine. Thanks for having me.
I really hope that Tiffany's words and voice today made you feel loved and empowered. I want to encourage you to grab Tiffany's book. It's linked in the description below and follow her on social media. She's such a great follow. I hope you have a great week. I can't wait for next week when it's time for coffee.
Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come find me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley or on Facebook at The Jeanette Tapley. If you have any questions about the show or what's coming up, be sure to check out itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait to see you back here next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friend.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.